I'm Rachel, the creative director for Ram Dass's Love Serve Remember Foundation, and I'd like to welcome you to our Inner Academy, a virtual Dharma hall where our family of wisdom teachers will help you navigate your daily life by bringing ancient wisdom into a modern context. With over 200 hours of audio and video teachings, meditations, and practices from teachers like Ram Dass, Krishna Dass, Sharon Salzberg, Jack Kornfield, Roshi Joan Halifax, Joseph Goldstein, and many more, the Inner Academy is your core resource for finding balance, presence, and navigating the ups and downs of your daily life. The Inner Academy has guidance for every step of your journey. Choose from an annual or monthly membership and gain access to past and future courses, retreat replays, virtual community, and much more. If you've been familiar with Love Serve Remember Foundation for a while, you'll know that most of our offerings are given freely or on a sliding scale basis. So when you subscribe to the Inner Academy, you're paying it forward and bolstering our ability to continue creating accessible offerings for all in the future, as Ram Dass wished for us to do. Be here now and start your journey with Ram Dass's Inner Academy today. For more, visit ramdass.org/Inner Academy.
Hello and welcome to the Shakti Hour podcast on Ram Dass's Be Here Now Network. I'm your host, Melanie Moser, and today is the second installment in our Shakti Sacred Music series, featuring conversations with musicians about sacred music and the feminine voice. My guest today is Brooklyn-based musician Kip Malone. Kip and I have been friends for many, many years, and I was very happy that he had the time to come and talk to me for this series. I've asked each guest to bring in a piece of music for us to start our conversation. Kip brought in a piece by Alice Coltrane from a live recording, 1978 UCLA, called Transfiguration. It's an improvisational piece that is almost 12 minutes long, and we didn't include the whole thing here, but if you go to the Shakti Hour page at BeHereNowNetwork.com, you can find a link to listen to the whole thing. You can also find links to the ecstatic music of Alice Coltrane, which you're hearing briefly here at the beginning, a collection of bhajans and chants that she recorded at her ashram in Southern California in the 80s and 90s. I hope you are enjoying the Sacred Music series. Please do follow us on Twitter at Shakti Hour, Instagram, Facebook, and remember to subscribe to the Shakti Hour on iTunes and leave us a rating and review. I'm so grateful for the opportunity to create this series for you, and I hope that you enjoy it as much as I do. It's funny to make a podcast about music. It makes me just want to listen to music and not so much to talk about it. But this conversation today, you're in for a treat. We recorded it in the middle of the Kavanaugh hearings, a Kavanaugh investigation. So we touched on a lot of current events, as well as, you know, sharing about personal spiritual journey and exploration and reckoning with the self and the prayer involved in improvisational music. Please share this series with your friends, and thank you so much for listening. So what are we going to listen to?
I'd like to listen to a track from Alice Coltrane's live recording, Transfiguration. It's actually the title track from this record, Transfiguration. It's recorded live at UCLA in 1978, and I think it's very beautiful and fantastic and magical. Peace.
Tell me how you came into this record. Like, how did you find this record?
I think that I was just paying close attention to the jazz genre on the iTunes when they reissued it or something digitally. Mm-hmm. I was on tour, and I remember I downloaded it and was in a hotel room drawing with Tunde, and both of us had the experience that we talked about after it happened, where like we felt like we were flying with her through the music.
Like flying like birds, or like flying like on a... I saw you guys on a magic carpet together when you said that.
Through like time and space.
Yeah.
More like, yeah, like traveling.
Yeah.
With her. Hmm. I've only had that experience a small handful of times with music. I mean, it often is, you know, transportive and...
Yeah.
And moving, but like... It's a rare occasion where I've felt like I've had something pick me up and take me to another dimension.
Can see how you traveled.
Yeah, I think it's... I haven't listened to the record in a minute, probably like in a year, but she's incredible.
So just tell us what she's playing in that, because there's a whole band.
She's playing the synth. I don't actually know what the model is. I know that it was whatever it was is new to its time, I think.
It felt like soul energy, which is part of her gift, but also is this the sound of that thing. Whatever she was creating that sound on is also bananas.
Yeah, I mean, like, I should look it up, but I'm not going to. someone who is better at that will email you about it, I'm sure. I like how it's kind of doing a raga thing and then simultaneously doing like a blues tradition thing and bridging musical worlds. And also, like, there's no expectation that that's where it's going to go with the introduction. This is for me, even when I've listened to it hundreds of times, but like it still feels like starting in some primordial space, you know?
Yeah, it's definitely, the time thing is completely gone, but it also is so of the moment, like, it's a live recording.
Mm-hmm.
If you can feel that it's happening in that moment. I mean, and I had a Grateful Dead reference point, you know, with that energy, less the musicianship per se. But you know, this is fueled by what? This is fueled by study of musical. What would you say it's fueled by? Like, what would you say that where that is coming from?
I know an embarrassingly little about anything, but I know that there's inside of traditions, Eastern traditions, there's like if you're a student of someone or a student of something, then there's like a high level of discipline engaged in that, right?
Right.
And she, I don't know that she, I know she had a guru, so, and I know that she had like her ear to what was happening to the east of her, and engaging those musical traditions, and clearly a very disciplined person. Like, you know, it's funny, like, there's a lot of talk about like natural ability and people being born to do something, but, you know, and certain people may have some advantage over others of natural proclivity, but really, like, there's no faking time or the time you put into something, like,
right,
you know,
I mean, like, there was another 7 minutes or 6 minutes of that piece, and it's that kind of that dropping in, and then that you're there, you're not going to get out until what needs to be done is done. But the only reason that you can go in and do that mission is because you have put in the reps.
You've exercised the muscles to do it.
Yeah. which is a spiritual practice. You know, that's the whole game. And I feel like I needed that so bad today. Like, that just like helped wash away the whole week of, we're recording this in the middle of the Kavanaugh FBI investigation. So the week prior was the week of absolute brain melting.
Yeah.
And so, but literally that the first 3 minutes of that felt like it kind of helped me step into a new place with all of those feelings. And that's from 1978. So that's 40 years ago.
The act of like improvised music for me, I grew up in a high control group, a sect of Christianity. And I was pretty engaged in it. And when I would have to pray for the congregation when I was a kid, like pray in front of the congregation, I always felt like a phony. Like I was like God's not listening to me. I am a masturbator. There's no way that
God's listening to me. This voice doesn't count. In this sanctimonious zone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I still give it my best, you know. Performative prayer. But when I started playing live improvised music in San Francisco, and even before that, when I first like was not playing things off of sheets of music for youth orchestra or something, when I was playing just an acoustic guitar at the edge of my bed and like playing freely, I was like, oh, this is what prayer is supposed to be. And it's like the thing that, and I didn't have all the words for it that I have now, and I don't have enough words for it now, but like definitely it's like, this is, if I am to commune with the divine and engage the divine privately or publicly, this is the form that it actually takes for me in this body and this time, you know. So I believe that the world is made of music, and that you know, but that's also semantic, you know. Someone else could describe it differently. Someone could describe it through mathematical equations. Someone could describe it through other ways of experiencing how they experience it. But like, for me, and I also know that I'm not alone, because I've been touched by the music of Alice Coltrane since I was a child. I've been touched by the music of John Coltrane since I was a child.
Right. Pharaoh, so that was playing Sonic alongside Youth. Of this other part of your life.
Yeah, fortunately.
Yeah. So that was already there to a degree for to you degree, to yeah. find yourself in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Know them.
And do you have, do you have a perspective on their relationship at all? As I don't have any. John and Alice.
Oh.
As musicians, as spiritual partners, as.
I haven't done much reading when I've had the chance to talk to their children. I get the impression that they were some good and loving people.
Yeah.
You know, that's the impression that I get.
It's just something to consider. That kind of union.
Can you imagine having that with someone?
No.
So crazy.
And with the creative output of yeah. the two of them, so completely individual, yet completely, you know, intertwined too. I mean, it's not a huge, it's not like you're taking a huge jump from one side to the other, but it just seems like such a special thing. And like in this moment where we're trying to figure out how to be with one another in a new way. And
I mean, I honestly feel like there's models presented to us, to everyone, be it, you know, like the people that raised you, or the institution that raised you mm-hmm. or whatever, and that that's how society works. But I believe there's other things that work, and that there are people and events that are presented to us as like aspirational models, you know, like, or even like as like what not to be, or like here's a, like there's someone I can think of right now who seems actually like personification of American society embodied in a human being in a really negative and dark way. And I bet you can guess who I'm thinking of. And in the ways in which I've tried to deal with his omnipresence in the past 2 years, I've been definitely thought that like he's, well, this sounds, I'm not dismissing any form of resistance in direct action. Like I engage it, but also like it's a moment, it's like an opportunity to actually, it could be a really good teaching moment for the country to look at itself and not just project like, oh, this is this, that's the bad guy. Like that's the bad guy that is born of the excesses, the inability to look at the self, to reconcile with history, to like be honest about economic systems. Like that's like, he's just rocking it. He's just like doing the most with it, but
right.
he only exists as a product of this place.
Well, that's what I had a Skype with Ram Dass in January, and he was talking about a lot of things, but he said, this is our karma.
Mm-hmm.
Right. This moment, we're all here together. This is our karma. And I loved that because it is tempting to want to put it on one or the other. Like you said, it's not a denial of action or that, but it is like, oh, here's an opportunity to perceive clearly. And I was talking to Mirabai Bush, who's another one of the senior teachers in the Ram Dass community, and we were talking about how it's like the Ramayana. We were talking about this the other night too. It's like a fairy tale. It's like a folk tale Like, it's so dramatic. You know, even this hearing last week, it's so, I mean, it's better, worse than a bad movie. Like, uh-huh. The casting is so deliberate that it is almost like, okay, kids,
right.
Which one's yellow, which one's blue, uh-huh. Which one, you know, like, they don't make it too, there's not a whole, like, you know, gradation of color when they're teaching you those things. It's very yeah. clear.
Yeah.
So in a spiritual conversation, I totally get you. But that's difficult. You know, that's not necessarily, you know, I mean, I don't know. I mean, gosh, I don't know. Again, how do I know what someone else's experience is? But I know my experience of looking at my own self clearly is difficult.
Oh, yeah. So it's the hardest thing to do is to have a reckoning with the self.
Yeah.
It's, I mean, it's, oh, God. I'd much rather binge TV and eat fatty and salty things. I'd much rather watch other people's stories than to look at one's own story and
yeah.
where one is at in it and what responsibilities we have to ourselves and like to our shit and to our like actually doing the work of freeing the self for further growth, you know?
Right.
It's the hardest thing.
So that's the thing that is in that.
The hardest thing, I know, actually. I want to clarify. I'm sorry. Just because
okay.
I got to this location in a car driven by a man from Yemen. And there is...
Oh, yeah.
Like, if you're a five-year-old starving to death in Yemen, like, you, I mean, you still... I mean, you're still a soul that has to face itself and looking at death and looking at these things, like, but I feel like it's important to recognize and talk about the fact that we in this moment in this society are particularly privileged to be able to maybe find a retreat or a soft blanket to lay on and take the medicine or whatever to look at the self and do it that way. Like, and because we're that privileged, like, we actually should be taking advantage of that privilege and doing what we can to work on the self so that we can make better threads for this fabric.
Well said. What is that? Would you be willing to share what that experience is like for you, that looking at the self, or how you engage that practice?
I mean, try to keep a healthy community of friends around you that reflect you, that show, you know, that are willing to, like, tell the truth to one another, you know? Family that can help you see yourself. Seeing yourself through a child is a real thing, as much as a child that comes through you is their own thing and on their own path. The DNA is real, and you can see reoccurrences of the positive and negative in the family line embodied in person that comes through you. Ayahuasca medicine, I think, is a really incredible mirror and an incredible technology if one has access to it. For me, I don't want to. I've come from, like, in a proselytizing background, so I have to really work on not being preachy about. For me, that's been a really good mirror. Psychedelic. Entheogenic, or however we want to talk about the plant friends that have something to tell us You know, those are all really incredible helpers and mirrors in my life.
Yeah. You know, I haven't done the ayahuasca. I just haven't been called. I haven't called. And I did very little psychedelics. It just, I felt like it was already a part of me. When I had those experiences, I didn't need to have more.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think that there is when people tell me about, I have the image of like Mother Earth, like grabbing you, like I have the image of you becoming one with the plant, with the earth, with plant energy.
Yeah. I am no expert, and there's so many people with so much more experience than me with it. So it's, and also like, I think it's probably also like everything else. It's your own experience, but there are commonalities of experience that people talk about. And I have, at this point in my experience with it, I'm left with the distinct belief that spirit is a metaphor. It's like even though it can be a useful metaphor for as an organizing principle, like there's more than this whole thing. There's so much more. And like when talking about being like the Mother Earth, like there's a actual intelligence, and we could be called any number of things, but like it's kind of easy to talk about in terms of the divine feminine, you know. But yeah, who has a lot to say about where we're at as a species, you know, and a lot of great ideas about where we could be, you know, and those teachings are inside of a lot of indigenous folk traditions and indigenous folks around the world's understanding. And I hear skeptics and the voice of skepticism when I'm talking about this, because I've had this conversation several times.
Well, you're on the Shakti Hour, which is the divine feminine. I mean, so I don't see any space in the listening audience of this particular podcast for the voice of skepticism, but
yeah, it's just living your life in the material realm. It's funny to talk about spirit in a non-metaphorical sense, but it has been my experience thus far with it that like there is an intelligence that can be found through that particular combination of plants and that particular tradition of spirit work. And it is, you know, Mother Nature, Pachamama, you know, the goddess. The goddess is real. That's what it has shown me.
Yeah. And how does that, like, you know, how does that relate in your mind or in your experience or in your physiology to listening to, like, that piece that we were just listening to? To me, it feels like the same thing.
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's, like, we talk about like you haven't felt called. Because psilocybin was like instrumental, LSD and psilocybin were instrumental in me not killing myself when I left the church or whatever and like lost my community around that. It seems dramatic, but it's real. I've had my ear to the ground about like what other plant medicines, what other are out there since then, you know? And so like I have felt I have felt called by it, but then also once I engaged it to any level of depth, I started being like, oh, it was also, this is also here, this energy, this voice is also in this and in this and in this and like and all these things, whether it's like, whether it's, it doesn't have to be coming through someone that does Shipibo ceremony, like, you know, like it is, you know, has a bunch of different voices in it and different masks, and it's here and it's available, and it's like one of the reasons why I know I don't need to be a proselytizer saying like everyone's got to do this way is that like it's available to people. The voice is available to people through different forms. I talk to people that do Vipassana and like I tell them my experience or share experiences that I've had in ceremony, and they'll tell me that they've been to very similar or the same places and heard the same voice through Vipassana, which is like, you know, I haven't done that yet, but I would like to.
You say that with, you know, a look on your face that I interpret, which might not be right, is this kind of value judgment thing. There's this, you know, I feel like there's an idea that, well, if I'm you know, I'm doing these ceremonies, but but I'll eventually do the...
Oh, no. Well, because I know that a lot of people think that, like, there's, like, a left-handed path and a right-handed path, and that, like, there's a lot of, I mean, living through decades-long drug war that classifies anything, anytime anyone wants to, like, change their consciousness through something besides beer... Which clearly isn't necessarily the best road. I'm sure it's fine sometimes. that's been demonized, and it's been like, and even if it's, even if we're coming from a counterculture or from a spiritual tradition that is like outside of the mainstream of like, I believe that the police are my friends. I believe that, you know, FBI is on my side, like whatever. Like you don't have to be deep into this consensus reality to still be affected by its prejudices, and I think even like inside of like the stories I've heard around why Ram Dass left what I guess they thought LSD was like the panacea at some point. And then like the stories I've heard about that and like how he became interested in the spiritual tradition that he delved into. It to me, I'm very happy that it happened that way, because clearly it's been a great thing for a lot of people. We're like sitting here having this conversation because of that in some ways.
Right.
I mean, we're friends regardless, but like, but I think that there's even inside of that, like this dismissal of, to say that it's like, it's not serious because it, because someone wore a dumb hat when they were doing it on 8mm film or something. I don't know.
Right,
but,
yeah. Well, I mean, they talk, I mean, that's the, you know, the story goes that the, there was a sacred moment. You know, I've talked to Lama Siltram Alioni, a female Lama, you know, and I talked to her about it. She lived on the corner of Haight and Ashbury in 1967. And I asked her, I said, what percentage of people were doing it out of spiritual consciousness exploration, what people were just doing it to get high. And she was like, a good portion were not just doing it to get high. But then that shifted. And then there's, and then it became, that became part of the experience.
Mm-hmm.
So even if you were taking it in a sacred setting, then you had to deal with also the street Like you're saying, you're not going to get away from the status quo.
Yeah.
Even if you're, you know, totally dull or totally tuned in. Like the status quo becomes a part of it. Same thing. This is our karma.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So anyway, I just think it's a cool, I think it's cool that from what I hear, I think it's cool because it does seem to be kind of imbuing consciousness with this web idea, like that you're, you know, that, you know, Ram Dass says, if you know how to listen, everyone is the guru, right? So if you, you find your path and you tune into that path and then you start to hear that reflected, you know, everywhere, or you start to hear it reflected in other voices coming through different traditions, coming through different experiences. But I have to say, and I don't know anything about this scientifically or music, but when I listen to that piece, it seems to transcend all of that garbage. And it seems to encapsulate all of that for me. And I just am, and this is another thing that we've been talking about a little bit on this series, is like, is it sacred music, is, or is all,
you know, or is everything sacred,
or is everything sacred,
yeah,
or is all music sacred, right?
Yeah, I kind of think, because even something, I walked into a shop in Williamsburg last week and they were playing a song called, some band in LA, of kids in LA from 2 years ago,
Enough said.
The lyric was, guys of my age don't know how to love me, don't know. And like the whole narrative is this like young woman like dissatisfied with her contemporaries and like, I'm gonna get an older man, you know.
Oh,
and I was like, oh, an older man wrote this song with you in LA in those gross ass writing session, and like there's like so much so wrong and so gross with this song. And then me and my friend watched the video and looked at all the writer credits on it. I'm just like imagining the scenario and just like feeling sick to our stomachs. But besides the fact that you could be someplace not with English as your first language, dancing to that song in a club and being in your body and having a spiritual experience, there's like that aspect of like the potential sacredness of it. There's also like the fact of being able to look at it and look, examine society where it's at through it, that like, even though it's not the medicine I prefer, like it also is like potentially like sacred. It's a meditation. You're like, oh, what does this mean? And what does it mean about, what does it mean about patriarchy? What does it mean about like, what can we deconstruct and what can we understand about where that dude who's trying to hang on to 16 through the body of a 16-year-old, you know, like how do we understand that? How do we deconstruct it? How do we transform it in myself and beyond, you know?
Right. Right, yeah. Because, you know, there was a time when I was really deep into my study and practice where I went through, I'd say it was a good 6 months where I really had a difficult time determining what was real and what wasn't. Like, I was doing so much practice and energy work, and that it was, and it sometimes still is like that, but I definitely went through this time period where the boundaries were very fluid. And so, you know, did I walk into the store and put on this song for my own awakening?
Yeah.
You know, or my own enjoyment, or my own, you know, fear trigger. And I think that, like, whoa, like that seems like that's my fantasy of what happened 1966 to 1968.
Mm-hmm.
That there was a swath of people kind of walking through those barriers and kind of clearing them out for all of us. And now I feel like it's kind of happening again, except that there's no medication. And there's no joy. There's no party. Mm-hmm. Now, I mean, because I'm not going to ceremony. I'm not doing these things. I am doing spiritual practice. But I mean, just like on the day to day, I feel like we're all tripping.
Oh yeah, it's a very psychedelic time.
Yeah.
But it's kind of a bummer trip.
It's a bit of a bummer trip.
Yeah.
But it can also not be.
Yeah.
Way not be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I feel like I don't know if I want to get into that. Mm-hmm. But the thing about Alice Coltrane and her music, I mean, not to just like force an uneducated opinion on it, is it to me? It isn't psychedelic. It transcends that kind of realm to me somehow. I mean, it took you and Tunde like through space and time
mm-hmm.
together in a hotel room. For me, just now, it just like helped me release an entire week of emotion.
I feel like something that's happening is a semantic thing that is like the baggage of the hangover of the Summer of Love. Like, because I want just to clarify from, just to be clear, when I talk about doing ceremony and my limited experience with it, there's things that where I'm like, oh, this is, I know part of this landscape because of psilocybin mushrooms. I know a little bit of this landscape because of LSD and mescaline and like, but it's like psychedelic does not touch it. It's like it's just a rending of the veil and entrance into the atrium of the spirit world. It's like, you know, into the bardo, into like, and it's not a party. I mean, there's like places that are like, oh, that's beautiful. And you know, but it can literally be terrifying, terrifying experiences. And so thankful for inside of those terrifying experiences, so thankful for the music that is the musical tradition of the Icaros that are protections and guides and help you navigate the space. Like it is a musical experience. To associate it with any of the baggage that one might have with the gabber party that your cousin ended up being committed after, you know, like whatever. Like, there's definitely, you know, potential for serious. It's very serious. It's very heavy. It's very heavy medicine and like. But to sit, it's getting to listen to Alice Coltrane outside of all of that is like I don't think it's disconnected. I think it's very much connected. I'm not in any way suggesting that she was engaging the same practice or anything, but like it's in there. It's in there in as much as music is the voice of the universe and music is, you know, integral to this experience in our physical bodies, in our spiritual bodies.
Everything you're saying is exactly right, and I appreciate you bringing up the depth of the difference between the experiences and clarifying that and sharing your experience around that in the present moment. And I might not be right, but there's something, I mean, transformative just about listening to that that is beyond my will,
mm-hmm.
right? My will was to listen to something,
uh-huh.
right? And then what happened to me wasn't in my mind. It really affected me, and not even in an energy body. It affected me as if I felt like as if she was here with me, giving me a treatment.
Yeah, as a music as a healing force.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that to me is so profound. And so I guess the question that I keep coming back to with this conversation is, you know, that responsibility, that was her personal practice, right? On top of her tapas, her discipline as a musician, as a student, right? As a practitioner, that's imbued in that, you know? And so you, with your own practice, as a listener, can step into the CVS and grab the sacredness out of whatever LA song. Mm-hmm. But for the benefit of the whole,
that's where it's at.
Yeah. That's where it's at.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I guess I'm just getting to try and help reveal that. And I also feel like our generation, if you will, my secret agenda is I actually think that that's our path to leadership, is through art and creativity and expression in that way, and that that's going to be our best contribution.
Mm-hmm.
You know, less so than a public office or...
something that you have to get up super early for.
Anything that you have to do every day, kind of the same. we're laughing, but I mean, I'll back us up. And like, we're actually responsible to time on a certain plane, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And that, I feel like that's kind of part of it. And, you know, most of us came in right around like Jimmy Carter. We're like, oh, peaceful dude who wants to, you know, has a spiritual practice, who wants to do things differently. There's this tiny little window to land. Get some of that, and then
he's definitely the first president I remember being cognizant of.
Yeah,
like knowing what a president was.
Yeah,
yeah. And I remember classmates shit talking him because their parents were.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and I was like, I don't know, this guy seems all right. Seems fine.
I just I heard him on.
He's rad. I'm.
I heard him on Super Soul Sunday with Oprah Winfrey, my main competitor in podcasting. I'll give her a shout out. She needs help. You guys tune in.
Yeah.
but he was talking about the hostage situation and, you know, how even his wife was like, "You got to take some military in there and get those hostages out." And he was like, "Can't do it. Can't do it," you know. And then he had to I didn't know the story. I can't even tell it now properly. But then it was Reagan that got to take the show up and welcome them home, because they wouldn't give him back until Jimmy was out.
Yeah,
that's how unpopular doing things for the benefit of the whole is. So I don't know. So I'm just looking into this possibility, because I know so many people, you know, almost have this secular spiritual life, even in their own life, and I'm curious about how better we could serve, you know, one another by drawing that in. In a new way, right? You know? In a new way.
I am very excited by your impulse to talk about peace and promote it as an idea and work towards it. And beyond talking about it, actually doing physical work towards it. This isn't like a, I'm not coming down on anyone individually, but I, and besides myself, maybe, the lack of an anti-war conversation inside of the political conversation that's happening right now is, I know there's a whole lot going on, and there's a whole lot for people to be thinking about, and there's a whole lot of like seemingly immediately dire situations to take care of in regards to like how we want the country we live in to be led and governed and organized, and it's all very centered on the domestic right now. But I really want people to lift up their voices in regards to what we can do specifically as Americans to change American foreign policy in places like Yemen, who we choose to support in the world, like who is getting the shit kicked out of them, you know. It's generally the poorest people in the most desperate places, and it's being done in our name and with our money, and it's a different game. The game has changed, and it's not as maybe obvious as it was when Americans were dying in Vietnam, or even when Americans were dying earlier in Iraq, as recently as, you know, the past few years. Like the nature of the exploitation and the violence is changing, but it's really as bad as all of that, and in our name, yeah, and with, yeah, our money, yeah, and the only people that can stop it right now is us, you know, like. Mm. And we actually can, if just a consensus is built, say, don't take my money and spend it on killing people. And also, like, you're taking my money and spending it to kill other people so that you can make more money. Like, that's, like,
yeah,
like, so, like, addressing the economic organizational principles,
yeah,
and addressing, like, what is being done with our money, with our labor, with, yeah, our time. Like, it's really, like, it's real. Humanitarian crisis in Yemen is real. It's, like, already beyond shameful. It's already beyond, like, where were you when that was going on? It's,
yeah,
it's disgusting and disgraceful.
Yeah.
And really our responsibility as Americans to do something about not supporting it anymore.
Yeah.
Sorry, I had to. Not sorry. I'm not sorry, but I know that's not what we're talking about exactly.
I don't agree. I think it is exactly what we're talking about, okay, because it's passion, and I think that what is the value of having a spiritual practice and of having this conversation is being able to find that, what you're passionate about, and being able to come to it with that kind of clarity, right? Because, you know, and that's part of what you were saying. It's like, it's not necessarily easy to reflect upon the mascot of the American way and take that in to look at yourself. Mm. But then also what is in there that's purified? What is in there that is ready to, that's passionately ready to act in a moral and just way? And I think that that's all a part of it, you know?
Yeah.
And for this moment, for these conversations, the music being the music in the feminine voice, you know, a different voice, right? Who was it? Oh, it was a, what's his drunk? What's his Vibart? The one that got fired. the main...
Oh,
the
Steve,
main
no,
Bannon, yeah.
Bannon, Steve Bannon.
He there's a post that came through, you know, he's like, oh, women are going to take over the world. Well, okay, fine. That would be the worst thing. But, you know, but that's not my agenda. I mean, but how about, you know, you're hearing, you know, and this goes to culture, this goes to gender, this goes to
race and ethnicity,
this goes to, yeah, to sexuality. We're listening to another voice, and you know, and the female voice is across all of those,
mm-hmm.
right? And within men as mm-hmm. well. It's so that feminine voice and giving space to, let's tune in and hear what that says. Let's, how do you even listen to that, you know?
I don't know. I think that if we, like, actually just did it statistically, like, did gender parity as far as, like, pay and placement in society and positions of power, it would have a fundamental, it would change things fundamentally. I do believe that. But I also, like, I think also these concepts, which are real and useful inside of these bodies and inside of time, that, like, sometimes I see it as, like, this puppet show that we're engaged performers in, and then there's this, like, another tier of icons and archetypes pulling the strings and playing the music, and then outside of that it's a more singular and then a more singular like levels of being, and that we have to gender is real, sex is real, I think all these things are real, but I think someone as clued in as Alice, from what I can see,
mm-hmm.
is maybe expressing a more integrated thing
mm-hmm.
than simply the divine father, the divine mother, the feminine or the masculine. I feel like it's like the best aspects of David Bowie, the best aspects of any number of these people that are musical prophets, that you know, like, where it is an integration of the voices. And it might sound like just some old dude when I'm talking and being like talking about gender parity and not talking about like it's time for the women to rule, like I don't want to trade hierarchies. I want like to make room for listening to voices, for women to have power over their own lives and to influence the course of this world. I feel like what we need is the integration of these energies, and it's like there's a whole lot of reason why people are like, you know what, maybe it's just masculinity in general that needs to get flushed down the toilet. I understand how people would feel that way. I understand. Like, there's a horror show, a track record of despicable behaviors. It is out of balance. I believe that there is, that the way forward is a balancing. And that balancing might be like, no, you gotta just sit, you all have to just sit down and shut up for a while, you know, men. But ultimately, I reject the premise of the future is female. I think the future, any plausible future, is an integrated future.
Yeah.
And maybe we have to have a big party where it's that part of the future is female, and to get it to a place of true integration and parity. And when I'm saying that, like, I'm please, like, to be very clear, like, this work that you're doing, I believe, is so important because you're making room for women's voices, and you're, like, it's very funny even hear my voice talking about this. Just like, hey, dude, shut up. But, like,
but see, that's not at all what I want. That's part of why, and, you know, I want this.
Yeah. And I do remember that you invited me here, so I feel like it's okay to talk. But
well, I think this has been great. I think this has been great. I think this has been really good. And I think that, you know, prior to this, I knew that this is a longer and bigger and broader conversation, which I hope to encourage and draw upon and do, you know, more of. And I'm just going to, in the interest of the rest of our lives, you know, take us out. But I just, I'm so, so grateful that you agreed to come and speak with me and be a part of this and to share that particular piece, something I'd never heard. And I'm really happy to know it now. And so tell us just briefly what's going on with you. The TV on the Radio just did your 10th anniversary shows. What's happening next?
Oh, yeah. It was the 10th anniversary of a record.
Oh, of the actual record, not the band.
Dear Science. The band's been around for even longer than that. you know, working with different folks, my friend Erin Durant, I helped her with a record last winter, and it's being mixed now, in the process of mixing it, and I'm excited for that record to be on my turntable sometime in the early part of next year. And making music with Ice Balloons still, and slowly making a new record with TV on the Radio, and making music in my bedroom on the regular. Some of that may enter the world.
And making cool art video pieces that you're sharing.
Oh yeah, I love that. I want to learn more about that, get better at it, and share it in a bigger way. That's a goal I have.
Yeah.
I'm so happy that you're doing this.
Yeah, this is great, Kip. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Golden egg, brilliant descents from the flaring grass and lines, and it's the wild of black hen as her dance ruptures the scrim. I kick and feed to pierce the veil and let the spirits in. But I'd like to dance with you right in this game. We drop on through the fall into the river of all name. Until we double back to whence we came. Let me stroke and pet your feathers, ye cluck a glad refrain. Moving through the light, golden extraordinary. Tasteless life, even with it, but a pit and poison berries. Over me in the night, darkness is wild, vibration. Never on the verge of flight, lift us up in exaltation. As the sweet firmament spins, all the halo glows above the comb of wilder black hen, and the crees whisper amen, and the trees.